Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's November 29th, 36 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Guiboy. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning. I hope that you had a great Thanksgiving weekend, and it was a pretty nice weekend, especially if you wanted to spend some time outside. Unfortunately, it was just a little bit too warm, especially for what we would normally see in Park City for this time of year. And the weather that we had over the weekend is more or less going to be continuing as we start off this new work week. So it's a bit on the chilly side right now, but by this afternoon, it's really not going to be all that chilly with a daytime high of 52 degrees. Under a mostly sunny sky. So it's going to be a pretty warm day in Park City, especially for November 29th. And then as we go into tonight, mostly clear skies with a low near freezing at 32 degrees. And then Tuesday, going to be more or less a carbon copy of what we're going to find today with a daytime high of around 50 degrees. And then overnight, Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, a low of 28 degrees. So we'll go mostly sunny on Tuesday, mostly clear on Tuesday night. Then on Wednesday, daytime high of 50 degrees, mostly sunny, then a low of 31 degrees on Wednesday night. We'll actually trend a little bit warmer for the second half of this work week. We'll see a daytime high of 56 degrees on Thursday, so temperature's going to be even warmer still. So if anyone wants to get outside and enjoy this late fall warmth, the weather looks to be ideal to do so, just not great for the mountains where we would where we could really use some moisture for some snow and also colder temperatures. So 56 on Thursday, mostly sunny with an overnight low of 31 degrees Thursday night into Friday morning. Then on Friday, we'll see the daytime high climb to 53 degrees. And then more or less wash, rinse, and repeat into the upcoming weekend. But temperatures will start to trend a little bit downwards by Saturday into Sunday. So on Saturday, instead of middle 50s, we get lower 50s. And then on Sunday, the daytime high looks to be in the middle to upper 40s. And then we'll see a Saturday night low of 29 degrees. If we're looking a little bit further down the road, the next 8 to 14 days at this point are looking a little promising because we're looking at predominantly dry skies over the next 7 days. But models are indicating that we could see a little bit of a pattern flip and a system move in early next week. It's nothing that's set in stone, and it's not a slam dunk that it's going to happen. But if we're looking for any relief, that's where we would potentially find it. So we're definitely going to keep our fingers crossed that that system actually does end up panning out early next week.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the executive director of the Park City Sunday Market, Kate McChesney, with a look back at the summer market and a look ahead to the Silly Bazaar. Then Park City residents Mitch Solomon, Bonnie Park, and Jeff Revoy discussing their concerns of the proposed Dakota Pacific that just days before the Wednesday public hearing before the Summit County Council. And finally, Park City Mountain Chief Operating Officer and Vice President Mike Gore will be in with details about the opening of the resort yesterday with more terrain to come. Stay tuned. And stay tuned coming up on Mountain Money right after the local news hour. Today's guests include journalist and author David Wessel discussing his new book, Only the Rich Can Play, The Story of Opportunity Zones. Then Susan Hance-Sykes walks through the 9 traps of growing your small business and highlights the solutions found in her new book, Yes, You Can Take a Day Off. Finally, the host unravel Black Friday's stock market activity and look at the anticipated economic disruption from the new COVID variant. Again, all of that on Mountain Money at 9:06, right after the local news hour and NPR News. Well, the Park City Council is set to consider changes to the city's codes for accessory apartments next month. If the changes are adopted, more affordable housing could become available in Park City. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
How to get more of the people who work in Park City to live in Park City is not a new problem for City Hall. With skyrocketing real estate prices and reasonably priced rentals becoming more and more scarce over the years, finding a solution has become a top priority for the City Council. One facet of Park City's housing crisis is the recent proliferation of short-term rentals, like the ones found on Airbnb and VRBO. Many of the units now available for rent in Park City are rented on a nightly basis, which provides a lucrative business opportunity for property owners, but has forced out many who traditionally rented those same low-cost units to live near their work. The Planning Commission forwarded a positive recommendation to the City Council earlier this month for changes to the city's code to reduce some of that pressure. Proposed changes to accessory dwelling apartments, or ADAs, include lengthening minimum lease lengths from 30 to 90 days, increasing the number of apartments allowed inside a 300-foot radius, and reducing the minimum allowed square footage to just 280 square feet. ADAs are units added on to a single-family home. Park City planner Rebecca Ward says allowing more of them and allowing them to be built in smaller sizes could spur homeowners to build more ADAs, which could lead to more options for affordable housing.
What we're looking at are some potential reductions to some of the regulations to hopefully incentivize more of these accessory apartments because nightly rentals are prohibited, and so it will help increase the long-term rental stock citywide.
Changes to the city's code are not the only way Park City is looking to tackle the housing problem. The city council is also considering a deed restriction program that would pay a property owner a percentage of their home's value in exchange for permanently giving up the ability to rent the property on a nightly basis. Park City Housing Development Manager Jason Glidden says code changes are just one option for the city, alongside things like the deed program and building new housing altogether.
It's just another tool in the toolbox, right? It's just increasing housing opportunities in the community. ADUs, yes, can be tend to be built faster. They are generally smaller units in size, which tends to lead towards a cheaper rent. So that helps in affordability. But yeah, like Rebecca said, you know, any way we can incentivize to create more long-term rental solutions or long-term rental units is going to help out the community.
The city conducted a survey on ADAs earlier this year, and some public feedback asked how changing codes would affect homeowners association bylaws. Ward says a state law passed earlier this year does influence how HOAs can enforce their own bylaws when it comes to accessory units, but the code changes the city is proposing do not.
Whatever regulations are in place for homeowner associations, those would the city is not intending to impact those. When someone converts a portion of their single family home into an accessory apartment or an internal accessory dwelling unit, the state did preempt HOAs specifically to those IADUs, but the city went through and really minimized where those would be allowed. So there is some impact to HOAs with those, but the accessory apartment code does not propose any changes.
The city council will discuss the code changes in a work session December 9th. A public hearing on the changes is scheduled for December 16th. Input from the public can be sent ahead of the meetings to planning@parkcity.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
The U.S. Forest Service announced on Friday that Christmas tree permits are now sold out for the Heber Camas Ranger District. Although the local ranger district is sold out, that doesn't mean that people cannot still cut down their own tree. The Forest Service says that the Evanston and Mountain View Ranger Districts in Wyoming, as well as the Salt Lake Ranger District, still have permits. The Forest Service says only trees under 20 feet tall can be cut down, and only one tree is allowed to be harvested per permit, and only one permit is allowed per household. Once the tree is cut down, the permit must be firmly attached to it. A tree without a permit can be confiscated and held by the Forest Service until one is produced. For more information or to purchase a tree permit, visit recreation.org. Well, opening day at Park City Mountain Resort drew crowds of people enthusiastic to get back on the snow. And what has been a warm and dry beginning to the winter, most said they were surprised at the conditions they found. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has this from visitors on the mountain.
After a delay from its original start date of November 19th, five lifts were spinning again Sunday to get first skiers onto two groomed runs at Canyons Village. Brock Hart and Natasha Fisher from Murray say they were pleasantly surprised at the snow quality and had a great time.
We were surprised. I was expecting some super pebbly, loose, nasty snow and some heavy crowds, but it's actually not been too bad for just two runs being open. It's just a beautiful bluebird day. Yeah. We can't wait to get at it some more.
If you're a skier, get out and ski. That's all I can add.
Pierce Bogan of Prospector says going to every opening day is a tradition.
Normally we have way more terrain than we have this season, but definitely thankful to be back out on the slopes. Considering that we haven't gotten any snow in like a month, it's better out here than I was expecting today. It's a little wet and damp in terms of the snow, but like I said, just happy to be back out here.
Park City Mountain Resort Vice President and Chief Operating Officer Mike Gore says he's glad to have the season underway and looks forward to skier-friendly weather.
A lot of warm weather and not as many snowmaking opportunities as we would like, but we've absolutely, our teams have made the most of it, and skiing and riding is really very good today. We can't control the weather, but we know it's going to work in our favor at some point. Snow's coming.
He also says the resort's glad to have fewer COVID-19 restrictions in place, especially when it comes to masks not required outdoors. The resort hasn't announced dates for more lifts and runs to open, but Canyons Village will continue to operate on a normal daily schedule from 9 to 4. Deer Valley's opening day is scheduled for Saturday, December 4th. Ben Lasseter, KPCW News.
It's 8:17 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the 15th season, I believe, of the Park City Sunday Market has wrapped for another year. And in the studio with a recap, I have the executive director, Kate McChesney. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Is
Thank
that
you.
Right? 15 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with a little COVID year, but, you know, we still pulled off some stuff that year, too. So, yeah, 15.
Yeah, great. So a good year?
It was unbelievable. I think being one of the first events to kick off the summer after COVID, there was a lot of nervousness and anxiety, but after all was said and done, that opening day was incredible, and we just kept on it from there.
Yeah. What were your numbers like every Sunday?
So every Sunday we averaged anywhere between, which is a little higher, we actually had almost a 30% increase in visitation, and so that was phenomenal, but also still just, you know, as everybody said, hang on to your hat as the summer started and then just kept continuing, which we kind of knew from the previous year. But our vendor numbers, we kept those down ourselves just to try to decrease the, you know, where people would typically get stuck on the street. And so, and then as well with the Car-Free Sunday, that really helped spread everybody out. So our vendor numbers were down about 30% as well, but then our increase in in visitation was 30%. It was unbelievable.
So what does that mean? Like 14, 15, 16,000?
We averaged about 16,000 to 17,000, and then of course always our heavy weekends, which would have been July 4th, which was truly July 4th, and so knowing that there was plenty of people in town, and we also run the 4th of July, and so knowing that I knew what was happening on Friday, I kind of had a grasp of what was going to happen on Sunday, and it was packed, but people were safe, and that was really what our intention was.
Yeah. So did that work well, having fewer vendors? Or, I mean, looking ahead, would you want to ramp it back up to what it used to be?
We definitely took a decrease in revenue by having fewer vendors because, of course, we're a free market, so it's not charging people on the street by any way, shape, or form. So we'd like to see that go back up. But of course, we're going to continually look at what the, you know, just what the current climate is for everything going forward.
Okay. And we've seen some changes into the parking, especially around, you know, like Park Avenue. That's working out
well. That is working out. I mean, we've always had a really great relationship with the city, which I'm so fortunate for. And so we're continually working together to make sure that our people know where to park. And our people, that sounds awful, but people know where to park. And so we really direct everybody to either the Eckerhill lot or the high school.
Okay, and they seem to be doing that.
They seem to be doing that, as well as we had a huge increase in our bike valet. So our bike valet went up tremendously. We were biking anywhere between 200 to 250 bikes a day, which is it's amazing in this town. We're very thankful.
Yeah. And then you also take that three-week break in October. I think part of that is that you've got the Summit County Fair, but we had also had Arts Festival, of course, Tour of Utah, and then kind of the do-nothing. That seems to be working out, though, well for your staff.
It does. It actually does. Actually, in August, we take the three-week break. So, again, yes, what would have been, well, it was Arts Festival. What would have been Tour of Utah? Our staff is actually at the Summit County Fair. We run that along with the fair administrator out there in Colville. And so that really works out well for us because it's a complete different style of of event, and it's a lot of fun. And then that one no event weekend really is for us no event. And so our staff gets one little teeny tiny break in the entire summer. And we take advantage of that.
Yeah. And how did you do? Oh, okay. You know, we hear of everybody else just suffering from a lack of staffing. You were okay?
So we knew right out of the gate when I talked to a couple of my leads that we were going to have to increase our payroll. And so we increased our payroll almost 20%. And so we, right out of the gate, we're paying top dollar to make sure everybody shows up because we, as everyone in this community, need staff and need people to put the market together from 5 o'clock in the morning till we kick off at 10 And so we had a great crew. And a lot of our crew has been with our staff for almost 9 to 10 years. So it's, they know what they're doing. They were excited for me to call them and say, hey, I know you're coming back, but we're going to give you a raise regardless. So it was a really good summer for us. We're very thankful.
Good. And I know you're very proud of your zero waste, eco-friendly market. How's that? Can you put some numbers to that for
still,
us?
Yeah, still running really, really well. We have a lot more composting now, which happens. We still go out and feed the pigs every Monday or Tuesday. And I want to say we had I have to look up this number because, of course, it was really early this morning. Dun, 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 dun. We maintained a 74% diversion rate. So that's really exciting, which ultimately means that, you know, maybe about 20,000 pounds went to the landfill, which is not a whole lot considering we had almost 220,000 people at the market over the course of the summer.
All right. So we've got one more summer under the multi-year contract that you have.
Correct.
And those dates have been set. At what point do you then start talking about a new multi-year contract?
So I've already got on the books with the city starting in January, because it does take everybody involved to really make sure that we're doing exactly what we want to do with all of our friends and neighbors here on the street.
Yeah. The city, I mean, they talk very highly about how easy you and the staff are to work with, and you basically do whatever you're asked of. Is that though enough to get you another multi-year contract? Because it's just been, you know, we hear so much more now about just too many events, too much impacts to Old Town, things like that.
My fingers are crossed. And really, that's kind of all I can do, is our numbers stand for themselves. Our ease of management hopefully stands for itself. But after all is said and done, we're always open to all of the conversations. We're open to mitigating with the additional friends and neighbors on the street. We have always been open to mitigate with the friends and neighbors. So it's just a matter of us all coming together in one room and going forward. Yeah. But we would love another multi-year contract. Absolutely.
It just makes it easier, right?
It certainly does. Yes. It makes it easy for sponsors. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we're all part of the nonprofit sector.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, again, it returns again with a 14 weeks.
Yeah. So it'll be 14 weeks with the 3-week break. We will be going this coming 2022, June 5th, we will kick off, go all the way to September 25th with those first 3 weeks in August off.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then we have our holiday bazaar coming up.
That's December 10th through the 12th?
Yeah, 10, 11, and 12. And Santa will be there the entire time. I'm super excited about that because Santa's, he's very busy, as we know. And so he will be there on Friday. We're switching locations again because why wouldn't we? And so we're going to be at the Yarrow or the Doubletree Hotel, which is on the corner of Park and Kearns. We kick off on Friday the 10th. We will be open at 5 to 9. And then Saturday and Sunday, we will be open 10 to 5. And again, Santa will be there the entire time. It's totally free to take pictures with Santa. We just encourage you to bring your own camera or your own phone. And so you just take them that way, and then you could post them on social media.
Okay. In terms of masks required or anything like that?
Masks are highly recommended, and anything can change between now and then, as we know. And so we're just going to say masks are highly recommended. I will have masks on site. I'll have hand sanitizer on site. And so at any time, if anyone's feeling uncomfortable, we are prepared to help them shop and be safe.
Okay. And then in terms of vendors, do you already have those guys lined up?
Those are all lined up. Absolutely. We've got about 90 vendors, a lot of new ones. There was a lot of new vendors this summer, even with the 30% decrease. We had a lot of new vendors because I think over the last 2 years, people got very creative in their homes and found out they were artisans. So we've got some great, great vendors, great holiday vendors. Get all your shopping done, everything from your baby to your amazing Park City dog, all the way to your aunts and uncles and parents. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So besides Santa, you also have other kid activities?
Or? Not necessarily, no. It's mostly just shopping and Santa. I've got a couple calls in from some face painters, but nothing's been solidified yet. But typically, it's always fun for just the kids to, you know, see everything and maybe cut a little Christmas list together.
Okay. Do you have any live entertainment? Or
just the music that's running. Yeah, okay. So We've tried that in the past, and all of a sudden, which is amazing, having somebody caroling in the middle, but we haven't really had that, and so we're just trying to. This is our fundraiser to keep us going, you know, throughout the year, going into our general fund. So we don't have big galas, we don't have big auctions. This is our fundraiser that we have. So the event is totally free for our patrons. Parking is free. Parking is really easy at this location, so that's what we're super excited for. Plus, it's easy on and off. And I'm hoping that the skiing will be a little bit better. But if not, ski for a little while and then come join us.
Okay. Again, that's December 10, 11, and 12 at the Doubletree.
You betcha.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No. Thank you so much. And always thank Kate Priest-Deborah for your support as well.
Okay. Thanks, Kate. It's Kate McChesney, the Executive Director of the Park City Sunday Market. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning. Well, the nation's long drought streak is continuing for the past 61 weeks. More than 40% of the continental U.S. has been in drought. The Mountain West News Bureau, Maggie Mullen, explains.
J.J. Schinker is a professor at the University of Wyoming, and she researches climate, drought, and water resources across the West. She says the current drought report doesn't surprise her, especially with the region's rising temperatures.
It's certainly jarring, especially from a water resource perspective, and unsettling from a, you know, Western perspective.
With a few small exceptions in Colorado, all of the Mountain West is in some degree of drought. And Schinker says increasing temperatures will likely push our environment into unusual situations, such as wildfires in late November. That includes the recent ones seen in Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana.
So we need to start getting comfortable in thinking about ways to deal with our dwindling water resources.
According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, the current drought streak is the third longest streak of its kind in recorded history. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Maggie Mullen.
KPCW News Time now, 8:29. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up on Wednesday, the Summit County Council will be holding a public hearing on the proposed Park City Junction Project. This is being proposed by Dakota Pacific. It's happening at 6 p.m. at the New Park Hotel, as well as via Zoom. And in the studio to talk about their efforts to see that this project does not move forward as proposed, I have Bonnie Park, Mitch Solomon, and Jeff Revoy. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I guess let me just focus on you two, because Bonnie, I know, has been following this process for a couple of years. I know she's been before the Planning Commission, before the County Council. You, however, kind of new faces and new names to this. And I'm guessing we've been talking about this project now for a couple of years. Where have you guys been?
This is
Mitch talking.
Sure, yes. Good morning. This project has been going on for a while, but I think we have to remember that it's also been happening in parallel with COVID, and the community has really been preoccupied with, I think, trying to get through that. And so it's just a difficult time for the community to have fully engaged in a public process. And really, I think, as the council was advancing towards a vote over the course of the last several weeks, this has really come to the consciousness and the forefront of the consciousness of the community. And we think the community is really galvanized against this and realizes that, you know, this is something they need to organize against and take an active interest in.
Yeah, and for you, Jeff, I mean, why all of a sudden?
Yeah, so we've been full-time residents of Park City almost 7 years. We've been against this project. I think adding on to the things that Mitch said, what we've tried to do in the last few weeks is, you know, the challenge with this is someone like Dakota has very deep pockets, and they can have favorable studies, lots of fancy presentations, and lots of legal counsel. So what we've formed in the last few weeks to try to galvanize this is a volunteer legal entity to give people like Bonnie, like ourselves, and other people in Park City a fighting chance for responsible development, not just for profit development. And so we have legal counsel, organization, and financial support, and that was one of the things we founded in the last month.
Right, so this Stop Dakota Pacific has really picked up some steam. You guys are fundraising. How much money have you raised?
You know, we'd prefer not to say how much we've raised because we think it's a bit of a signal to the developer, but let me just say that we were very gratified by the number of donations, you know, which indicates just sort of how widespread the opposition is. We've raised all the money that we need to get through an initial phase of opposition, and I think we're just really appreciative and fortunate that we have a fairly deep-pocketed community that has the ability to finance sort of whatever I think we'll need to do to see this through to completion.
All right.
And the entity is actually, the legal entity is formed as Friends of Summit County for Responsible Development. I tried to come up with the longest name possible, but it is really to think about truly responsible development and not just focused on Dakota Pacific, but all projects.
Okay, so the money, though, is paying for an attorney. Who have you hired?
So we're working with a firm out of Salt Lake called Clyde Snow. And they will be in attendance at the hearing on Wednesday. And just to take a step back for a second, Leslie, I think, you know, we recognize that there are certain requirements and needs in the community as it relates to affordable housing, workforce housing, and traffic. But we also realize that the greater Park City area is a special place, and that special places exist because of good decisions, often difficult decisions that can be made over a long period of time. And we're really just concerned that this community is reaching what we see as a bit of an inflection point where we're really at risk of kind of developing ourselves into oblivion and basically turning what is a special place to live and vacation into just another sort of mini city that happens to be next to a ski area. And we think that would be a tragic thing for the community, for the state of Utah, and frankly for, you know, all the people that have enjoyed coming here for so long.
All right. But I guess why the need that you've felt like you needed to hire attorneys to be there on Wednesday?
Yeah. So I'll just quickly take that. So I think there's two sort of paths to opposing this project. The first is really that there's community opposition, and hopefully we can demonstrate to the council through the things that we've done already and plan to do in the future that the community really is galvanized against this. And obviously, you know, the role of the council is to represent the voters. However, we don't exactly know how the council will vote, and so there are legal avenues that are available to the community to oppose the project. There are certain aspects of the project that we believe are potentially in violation of the general plan. And of course, every development has to be consistent with the general plan. And then we also believe that it's possible that this could be taken to the voters in a referendum. And there is a process in the state of Utah that allows certain matters to be escalated to the voters so that they can decide through the ballot process whether or not they want this to go forward.
Okay, and Pawnee, as I mentioned, you have been following the project for a few years, before the Planning Commission and such. Yeah. What is it that you don't not happy about with the project?
You know, it has been the process of, first let's say that we all really appreciate the work of the county staff and the county council, because this has been a very long process and they're doing the best job they can, and it's just something that we agree to disagree on. But the county established a blue ribbon committee back in 2017 for Kimball Junction, and you probably remember it, and I wasn't really following it at that point, because when I thought about Kimball Junction, I thought about, oh good, they're going to go in and fix like the Kimball Plaza area. It wasn't top of mind for me that they were going to be addressing the west side of Kimball Junction. And I don't think anybody really knew what that Blue Ribbon Committee was tasked to do. But just in the most recent red line draft that came out before this meeting, it specifically says, this is new language in the development agreement, that says, as written, the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan was to take existing development agreements like the Park City Tech Center and redevelop them into mixed-use projects with an emphasis on workforce and attainable housing, transit, traffic mitigation, and sustainability. The DPRE project is consistent with this new vision. And I don't think anybody in the community understood that the intention of the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan, beginning with the Blue Ribbon Committee, was to blow up the Tech Park agreement. I think that completely took us all by surprise. In addition to that, you're probably aware that Dakota had two what we would call neighborhood meetings by Zoom because of the pandemic. And in that, if you go to the Hay Kimball Junction, that whole initiative, and this is what I really am in opposition to, there was a way to take a survey on their site. The only way that you could provide input was to provide positive input. So at the Planning Commission, when I spoke before them, I just said, you know, everybody has been hoodwinked by this process. The notice should have gone far beyond the Kimball Junction neighborhood, all to everyone who lives south of Kimball Junction, so that they would be more in tune with what exactly was going on here. When people took that survey, the Planning Commission packets were stacked, and it was a format where they would introduce themselves. I'm so and so. My interest in Kimball Junction is this, and then they had a menu of positive things to say about the development agreement, and you couldn't get to page two of the survey unless you clicked at least one positive thing on page one, and I didn't do that, so I didn't get to page two. But to me, it was a way to stack the meeting packets for Planning Commission, and I pointed that out to them, and I'm just really grateful that they could see through that and get to a negative recommendation.
Yeah. And I guess at one point, though, I do recall hearing a lot of support for the project, and this was by younger people, people who said and told the Planning Commission that this is what they're looking for, you know, a place to live where they don't necessarily need a car. It's transit friendly. It's close to shopping. And so I guess what is it that we tell those people who did support it, right? I mean, you know, I've got three older people here in front of me that right, probably have a decent job and own their own house.
Well, I think that's an important thing about, first of all, we, as part of forming this entity too, we are huge believers in workforce housing, and it is a problem for Park City. There has been an opinion piece submitted to the Park Record, and it can also be found on Stop Dakota Pacific website that goes into all the details because it's fairly complicated. But at the end of the day, this project is a net negative for workforce housing in Park City. You're putting a hotel, 1,100 new units, of which the workforce level is a very small number. It could be as low as 55, and max could be 300. And the important thing is, it is not, when you get into AMI and different parts, and that's what this piece goes into, for someone to afford for 90% of the units there, you would have to make $90,000 to $100,000 a year. Or that would translate into one of our service workers getting paid $50 an hour for 52 weeks a year. That's not workforce housing. That's market rate housing.
Yeah. What is it that you're going to be telling the county council? I mean, when you get your chance, Mitch?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of messages. One is that, you know, we do believe that this project isn't accomplishing any of the things that they claim that it's accomplishing, which is how they're justifying the project. You know, they're sort of saying, we're going to accept a lot of new market rate housing, some more office space, a big hotel. In exchange for that, you know, we're going to get traffic problems solved. We're going to get workforce housing. We simply don't believe those arguments. In fact, we'd really like the council at the hearing to individually say why they believe that this project is a good thing, and frankly, to come up with some other arguments that we think the public will accept, because the existing arguments don't really resonate. So that's message one. You know, and then message two is we understand that the council may, in fact, elect to vote to approve the project. And I think we just want to let them know that if they do that, there are, you know, other avenues available to us to see if we can potentially stop this. And we don't want to approach this. Certainly, it's not personal in any way. I mean, I think Bonnie's done a nice job, and Jeff as well, saying, like, we understand that staff and the council, you know, work hard and make do their level best to serve the public interest. So it's not personal, but we do need to, I think, let the county know that, you know, we're prepared to fight this.
Yeah. And I guess if density doesn't go next to a major highway, where do we put density? Jeff?
Well, the question is, what you're talking about with the Kimball Junction, with this Dakota project, is the equivalent of three times Colville dropped into the small area of Kimball Junction. So the first question is, does Park City and some county belong having density? There is nothing in this project that is retracting any of the other approved sprawl. So if you are saying, hey, we're going to claw back sprawl and put density in, that would be a different, but this does not claw back any of this. And Roger made this very clear at the last meeting. This is just new density being added to Summit County without any trade-offs. So the question really is, we need workforce housing in this community. This is not a positive workforce housing. This is a net negative workforce housing. So that is why, as Mitch talked about, this should really be, and as Bonnie talked about, this has been stacked against. Saying something like a blue ribbon committee was not a representation of this community. It was stacked by the developers. And so we need the community to really figure out how best to use this land for the benefit of the community, workforce housing as well.
Yeah. And Bonnie, again, is it something that you support that the council go back to the original development agreement? I mean, should we see a tech park here?
You know, I have mixed feelings about that. I had a conversation with one of our council members, and I said, you know, gosh, and this was when phase one only included a 50,000 square foot medical building, which was consistent with the tech park. I said, let them go forward with their medical building. That's consistent with what the tech park approval was, and then give the community some time to sort out some different avenues as to how we might do that, and whether that's, you know, some form of bonding. I don't know. It's we've got the Build Back Better thing happening now, and that's pretty exciting. And there's probably more funding that maybe we could somehow come together with other funds to help UDOT along with improving the Kimball Junction interchange. But that's like well above my pay grade, figuring out all these things. I'm a process person. I like to look at the history of things, and that's why I'm sitting here.
Leslie, could I add one thing to that? So if you're going to add, you know, 1,100 new units there, where are these people going to work? We say that they're going to take public transportation. The whole point of the tech park was to bring diversity. So those people are going to need cars because they are likely going to have to drive down the pass to work in Salt Lake City, which brings more transportation, but increases the problem.
Yeah. Traffic studies, though, that have, again, from the developer side, saying, though, that a tech park actually has more traffic because you've got all of the commuter workforce showing up at the same time as we got the skier traffic, as opposed to something like this where people have just different varied schedules.
Yeah, I think it's not to say that the idea may not have certain merits, for sure. I think what we're saying is the community once upon a time said they wanted a tech park here. With very little public process, we've gone to a completely different land use. And I think we, and the community and our organization are certainly opposed to the plan that we see now. I think it's important that we communicate. We don't just want to be the voice of no, right? It's easy always just to say no. So we want to say, the first step is to say no, but now we want to afterwards take a step back and say, okay, then what? And that's where we feel like we need a new community process to say, what really should go here? And it ranges from, you know, major development, right? This land is in private hands. It has real value. If something's going to happen here in terms of development, it's going to be big, and the community needs to get its head around that. So one option is some other type of probably big development. At the other end of the spectrum is maybe this should be part of the open space that the community has been pretty good about acquiring over recent years. And there's lots of things in the middle. But first we need to stop this and then say, okay, what? And I think there's a role for the community in that.
Well, so for people who just voted yes in favor of that $50 million open space bond, you're not saying that we should use that money for this, are you?
Possibly. I mean, I think everything, you know, should be on the table, for sure. I wouldn't say categorically sitting here today that the answer to that question is no.
Leslie, I think just again back to the beginning of the community is always an unfair advantage because we don't have the deep pockets of private. There should be an unbiased study done, not just looking at the impact of Kimball Junction, or the Kimball Junction project, but what's happening with the PEG project and other projects, and actually look at an overall arching plan for Summit County and Park City. That is what should happen, not looking at each of these projects and rushing them through individually.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention before?
I think, you know, closing thought, we want to remind people that the hearing is Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. We are planning a rally beforehand at 5 p.m. on the plaza at Maxwell's. wear red. That is the color of the opposition movement. We'd like to see as many people there in person as possible. We think that's an important signal to the council. Certainly, if you feel more comfortable participating on Zoom, you should do that. And we'd encourage people who aren't comfortable coming in person to be on Zoom, and as many people as possible for that would be great. We think it'll be an important way of showing the council how invested we are in this process.
Okay. Mitch Solomon, Bonnie Park, Jeff Boyd, anything else?
Yeah. We'd encourage anyone to come to the rally, even council members, to spend time with their friends, neighbors, and constituents. So we will be there in full force.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm here on KPCW. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be talking with Mike Gore. KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Good morning. Well, the country's largest resort opened yesterday, and in the studio with an update, I have Vice President and Chief Operating Officer Mike Gore. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to see you.
Thanks. I'm glad you can make it. First, maybe just talk about what guests should know about any COVID precautions. I mean, when you look into this ski season compared to last ski season compared to what it used to be like, I mean, is it going to feel more like last year than years before that?
Yeah, great important question. I would say it's going to feel much more like in years past. And notably, no face coverings outside. So the aggravation so many of our guests had, right, pulling up that face covering while they're skiing and entering mazes, et cetera. So we don't have that any longer. Mazes are back to their normal layout, if you will, the format, which is, I think, easier for guests as well. There's no longer those ghost lanes for the social distancing. We're loading all of our lifts and gondolas at full capacity again. So all of those things are great. No reservation system for skiing this year. Again, I think that makes things easier for our guests and something that they'll enjoy. Some of these changes going back to normal. Importantly, we do have a vaccine requirement, proof of vaccination for our large on-mountain lodges. So the big cafeteria-style restaurants, Miner's Camp, Red Pine Lodge, by way of example, reservations are required, as well as proof of vaccination to dine indoors. So those are that's what the season looks like, but for the most part, it's really going to feel like yeah, it used to.
So you have people there checking the proof of vaccination, huh?
That's
people
correct.
Walk in.
Yes.
Yeah. So masks wouldn't be needed inside the restaurants. People are eating and drinking.
Actually, so while actively eating and drinking, face covering is not required. Other than that, face coverings are required still inside of all of our buildings.
All right. And at one point, Vail, as I recall, was requiring staff to be fully vaccinated. And then I think told staff that it was reviewing that mandate. So what's the status of that?
Yeah, so as everyone knows, Utah legislature passed a recent ruling that certain accommodations needed to be provided to employees if they for those companies that had a vaccination mandate. So quite simply, we still require a mandate. A vaccination. However, employees can request an accommodation, and there are a list of those types of accommodations, and we now are providing those for our employees.
Okay. So will they be separated from, or will they be commingling with everybody else?
They will be commingling with everybody else.
All right. Talking about restaurants, I had heard that you may not open all of the restaurants on the mountain. Is this just going to be like a weekday kind of decision, or?
So similar to what we did last year, we had a few restaurants that we had operated a slightly different schedule. We will do that again this year. We have some restaurants that will operate 5 days a week. But I think confidently we can say that we've designed that operating plan to accommodate the number of guests we have on any given day. And so I think it's going to work quite well.
Okay. And then what about the Omicron variant that we're all talking about? And would Vail reimburse Epic Pass holders if travel bans are enacted again?
So I should be cautious and trying to identify what is covered and the various specifics of our EPIC coverage. But I would just encourage our guests to go online and look at that covering. It's quite comprehensive. And so I want to make sure, though, that we don't give any information that it could be at all misleading, because that's very much a bit of a moving target, as we know, with this new variant.
Okay. And then EPIC passes, I think I saw December 5th. That is the final day?
That's correct. The end of the sales for EPIC passes are fast approaching later at the end of this week. And so still an opportunity to take advantage of that. And they'll be on sale through the remainder of the week.
Yeah, we heard that pass sales were crazy. And do you have any number for that in terms of what we saw a year ago?
Don't have a number other than we have announced that we did see an increase in season pass sales year over year. One of the interesting things to note, I think, Leslie, is so many of our new season's pass holders are really guests that used to buy a day ticket. And so they've converted because of the affordable price of the pass. They've moved from purchasing day tickets to a season's pass.
Okay. So, of course, you opened yesterday with some snow riding at the Canyons Village area. Anything more than the two runs?
That was it. High Meadow and Saddleback opened with Cocopelli and Mellow Moose. And surface conditions were fantastic. Riding and skiing was really great. It was so exciting to get open, welcome guests back, employees excited to get back on the mountain. And it really was just a terrific opening. And can't say enough about our crews, at both resorts, working so hard through this warm weather, taking advantage of every opportunity to make snow. And so I was really happy that we were able to get there and in such great conditions. Yeah, really was fun.
Yeah, so the decision to focus on the Canyons Village side of things, usually it's on the Park City side of things that opens. Why the change there?
Interestingly, not a change in strategy at all, making snow on both sides of the mountain. The warm weather, though, was really impactful, particularly at the lowest elevation. So we just weren't able to get enough snow made on Lower Home Run. And, of course, Saddleback and High Meadow at a little bit higher elevation enabled us to get that first. But as you know, we just are announcing now that we've been able to make enough snow on this side of the mountain on Home Run. And so Payday and First Time will be opening on Wednesday with Lower Home Run, Lower Silver Skis, and Turtle Trail. And we're going to have skiing and riding out of both villages Wednesday. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah. So what are you seeing, though, in terms of the snowmaking? Again, we've got cool temperatures overnight, but then, all of a sudden it's, 37 degrees. So
yeah.
You got to stop.
Yeah. So snowmaking, for the most part, this season has been a lot of those short windows overnight and then warming up during the day, and we have to shut down. We had a good run last week where we were able to make for a couple of days during the daytime hours. And so we'll keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, do you lose a lot during the day?
Fortunately not. It's not that warm. We're really not losing snow, just unable to make it during those warm temps.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about staffing. How are things looking for you there? I mean, you and everybody else, I'm sure. Not easy.
Yeah, I think we probably reflect the rest of our community here in terms of the challenges with staffing. We have been able to hire more international workers this year than last year. So it's helpful that we've got that resource again available. But we're doing fine. We've got still a number of openings that we'll continue to be hiring for. But our anticipation is to be staffed, if not fully staffed, close to it, and get all operations up and running and continue to provide that experience for our guests.
Yeah. What we've heard with the folks coming in from out of the country, just very challenging to find housing. When is the building going to be open?
Yeah, great question. So the workforce housing in Canyons Village will open next year. Mm-hmm. It's well under construction right now. And at build out, that's 1,107 beds. In various configurations of, you know, small apartments and a few dorm-style rooms, the full gamut, and that's going to be a fantastic addition to not only to our company, but some of those are available to other businesses as well.
Yeah, is that the biggest challenge with staffing, is just finding places for people to live?
It is. It's one of the big challenges. It's just a smaller workforce. There are a lot of workers, as we all know, that are out of the work pool right now. And so it's just been tight for everyone.
All right. Backcountry Gate there at the top of 9990 was closed last year and, again, is closed.
9990 Gate will remain closed and Peak 5 access will remain open.
All right. People get off at the top of 9990. Do they have to go through that gate? I mean, or can they just ski around it? I mean, what would happen if
Yeah, so it would be, essentially it would be trespassing, because we've got a closure to not, and we own the land, to be clear, on each side of the rope and the gate line. And so, you know, very difficult decision, a lot of emotion in our community, and you know, I'm an advocate for backcountry access, and that decision was a tough one for me as well to work through. But at the end of the day, really feel very good that that was the right decision for the benefit of everyone. And access is still available to the backcountry. Have to work just a little bit more to get it, but you can still go the same place.
Okay, and real quick, the status of Scott's Bowl. Have you tried to work with the property owners there to get that reopened?
Yeah, we have conversations periodically. You know, I've known those owners a long time, a terrific family, and we'll continue to have conversations and see where that goes.
Okay. And again, we had gotten you on tape yesterday about working with Ski Patrol, and you hope to have something. Do you foresee a season without a contract?
We were without a contract most of last year. And so I don't want to do that. Neither does our patrol. So we're all working to have that in place. And I'm optimistic that we're going to bring that to closure here sooner than later.
Okay. Mike, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much.
Mike Gore is Vice President and COO of Park City Mountain Resort. This is KPCW.